everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Theatre Pitch podcast. My name is Jem, this is Jem.
Hiya.
And this is Sean.
Yes, hello.
Are you with us, Sean?
Yeah, I'm putting my phone on flight mode.
Okay. Sean, are you with us both in body and mind?
Hello.
This is the podcast where three of us, whether Sean is with us or not, all take a random online encyclopedia article, and then we pitch how we would turn that into a theatre show. And then once we've done all of our pitches towards the end of the podcast, we then take them in true collaborative style and smush them together for the smush. So this week's article is a series of letters and numbers that Joe is going to tell us about.
I don't know what you mean. It's all perfectly clear in here. HD 32188 is a suspected variable star in the northern constellation of Auriga, and is positioned roughly in between Eta and Zeta Aurigae. It has a white hue and is just barely visible to the naked eye, with an apparent visual magnitude that fluctuates around 6.8. The distance to this star is approximately 3,000 light-years, based on parallax, and it has a magnitude of -2.87. Like, what more do you need to know? Do you want to know its stellar classification? It's 82LLLSHE.
I, technically. Yes, so it is a star, or a sun, but mainly a star that is like the sun. How did you guys find this one?
I actually found it reasonably easy.
Yes, I found it. I was annoyed that, obviously, prior to this article, I have rinsed Starlight Express and rinsed the idea of Stardust as a musical. I'm annoyed that this didn't come up earlier, so I've had to think of a fresh idea. But apart from that, I'm good. I promise that will be the last time I'll mention both of those running jokes for myself during this time. Promise.
Good. Well, good. As we all know, I love space. So
I forgot about that one as well. Did we ever was that ever in a podcast, or was that just a pre-recording where you were just like, I love space?
I don't know, but at this rate we can probably guarantee that anything bar maybe two or three things that's come up in this podcast, I've been like, I love this. So
I think it did actually come up in the podcast, because I think back in series one, was it, we had a space thing as well?
We had Stardust.
Wasn't it intergalactic dust?
Yeah,
interplanetary dust, sorry.
Yes, we've had that, which was super exciting.
That was season two, Joe. I think you'll find.
If you want to check it out, click down here right now. I'm just making extra work for Sean.
I'm going to have to find out how I do that into like... You can do it, can't you? Like, embed it into the actual video at the minute.
Don't worry, Sean. I'll give you a chat about annotations at another time.
Yeah.
When we get that as Wikipedia. This week's article is annotations.
So I think because of that work, I'm going to side with Sean and say, Joe, you're up first.
All right.
On no one's side.
You're not even
I don't have a side to be sided with, Gemma. This isn't a competition.
I wasn't thinking it was a competition. Oh, okay. I was just thinking, you know, defend your honour once in a while after Joe's given you so much more work.
Oh, I'm used to it. So, just me. Play Fortnite with him. I have to do a lot of work.
Hey, we don't use brands here. Massively multiplayer online battle royale shooting video game.
Yeah, that's a better title.
It's an easy name to remember.
Uh-huh. Joe, what's your pitch?
So, my pitch. Essentially, kind of takes faint inspiration... Much like you saying, did Jem mention that she loves space on cast or not? I can't remember if this was just after I'd told you guys, as in I can't remember whether we were recording or not, but after I told you guys what we were doing for this week's pitch, I think it was Sean was saying about how he would be really disappointed if someone bought him a star and then he found out its name was like HD 32188.
I would be.
And I was also thinking again about, hey, Jem, Sean, you remember the band Death Cab for Cutie?
Yes.
Well, the lead singer of Death Cab for Cutie, Ben Gibbard, 2 years ago released a solo single about Proxima B, which is a dwarf planet around the star Proxima Centauri that is theoretically the closest habitable planet to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought for this, what I wanted to do is it's a play about someone who for their birthday, someone buys them the they buy them a star. They buy them HD32188.
Is this the first time where someone's pitch is something that someone has already said?
Kind of. But within it, the idea is this person has bought this star as a present. And this person then, our protagonist of this play, decides that the Earth is becoming slowly uninhabitable. And they are going to build a rocket to go to this star that's been bought for them. And they're going to live there.
Okay.
So it is a play about someone who has decided they're going to build a rocket. And I was took inspiration from when I was doing some Googling around this for my regional theatre showcase. I found that around the kind of Derby area, there's a mobile planetarium that operates mm-hmm. out of a van, which definitely doesn't sound sketchy at all. But I thought, I'm working this into my play of, I want this to be a mobile piece of theatre that takes place in a camper van that someone has decided they are turning into a space shuttle.
Now and... you're talking to me. Now I'm on board.
Yeah.
The van is where it's performed, but the van is also the rocket.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'm on this now. I'm on this.
And yeah, it's just, it can be kind of whatever the show needs to be to get there. It's bits of kind of like comedy in the sense that how utterly surreal the premise is as an idea. It can bring into it kind of like elements of poetry, whatever kind of performed things need to be. But it's essentially just, yeah, it's a piece about kind of dreaming beyond the Earth and where we go after this. And also about how utterly terrible it is buying someone a star as a present.
Not just buying someone a star as a present. Buying someone a star as a present that's called HD32188.
Yeah. Exactly. It's about how buying someone a star with a bad name is a bad
the point
present.
Of like buying someone a star.
Joe, when are you 30, by the way? When's your birthday?
Is it the point of buying a star?
As of recording or as of release?
Oh, well, who knows? Who knows the difference there?
Isn't the point of buying a star that you can like name the star? So it's not just buying HD32188, it's buying that and renaming it Joe Spears.
See, now we're getting into this. I'm just gonna put this out there. You know when people like buy a star? Do you reckon they are? Who are they buying it off? I reckon it's just like oh, they've just sent me this like certificate on some really nice card that says you own HD32188.
What? Are you asking how can we prove that there aren't 50 people who also own that star?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We could all, like, 5, 10.
These people could literally have found one star and just be reusing it.
It's true.
It's the same template on PowerPoint.
I do have to ask, though, who also discovered this star and didn't call it Lollipet
Goldfish? Hey, Gemma, I don't like where your line of sentence is going because it's too close to my idea.
Okay.
To be fair, also, I will stand up for star namers here. Of we all, when we were younger, played Pocket Monster collecting video game, yeah?
Pokemon.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Got it, yeah. Genuinely didn't get it until Sean identified it. I'm not good at this game.
But, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I hit a point in that game where I stopped bothering and just let it call my Pokemon by their names.
Oh, I always done that.
Yeah, like I started off giving them fun names, and then by about the 10th one, I was just like, screw it, this Raticate's called Raticate.
I find that so disrespectful, Joe. These creatures are fighting on your behalf, and you're giving them stupid names.
Wait, their names aren't like Charmander.
You can give them nicknames.
Well, that's the species name. You could give them nicknames.
I always, up until this day, thought that was their name. And I've always, as a kid, questioned why, like, all the Charmanders were called Charmander. But I was clearly not a smart child. Nor a smart adult.
I mean, I do have a question that is faintly related to space and stuff from our childhoods. I was watching the most recent Men in Black film the other day, and, like, it suddenly occurred to me, are there only, like, 26... agents of the Men in Black? Because if they're using that whole agent A to Z system, they can't be doubling up. That would get confusing.
I suppose if
do they go to like
dies,
agent AA, agent AB? Do they do that?
What, like a spreadsheet?
Yeah.
I imagine it's per organization, because you go from You only see the agents from the American organization, am I right?
Yeah. Well, you also move over to Men in Black UK and Men in Black International.
Yeah, but you're still following American agents.
Well, yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
I don't know, Joe. I have no idea.
Maybe. I don't think anybody was meant to think this hard.
You know what? I apologise for this tangent, as well as Sean wants to get to watch the football. Do you have any other questions about my pitch?
No, I think it's quite nice.
I think it's great.
Thank you, Sean.
Of interest, is it on the list of ones to cut out and me give a worse pitch so we can use it?
No.
Or is it not that good?
Getting a van is expensive.
Yeah, and also, what would we call that theatre company? Get in the back of the van? Who'd go and see their shows?
Exactly. Sean, because I nearly stepped all over your pitch, do you want to pitch me out of my comments?
So, my, like Joe's, mine is also based on part of my rant from last week.
Okay.
Right. So, mine is a comedy. It's a two-person comedy. It is your classic end on fourth wall. You know, it's a play. It's a play. You're going to sit in the audience and there's going to be a story. Okay. And it's all set in a science lab. Sciencey. There's going to be like beakers and computer screens.
Oh, yep. You're triggering me.
And the premise of the story is two scientists, two friends, discover a star.
Cool.
Yep. And the issue that they're having is, what did I name the star? And the whole, it's going to be about an hour long. And the whole show is based around them bickering, arguing, competing, trying to make deals with one another about who gets to name the star. So at one point they're arguing like, well, I had the idea of making this telescope, and they're like, yeah, but I made the telescope work, but it was my idea to point it in that direction. Yeah, but it was my idea to focus it. I don't know sciencey stuff, but stuff like that. And then maybe they start like, well, let's play Uno to decide who wins, it's a series of events for them to try and figure out who gets to name this star. And in the end they call it HD, because eventually they give up and realize that, you know, they've both worked really hard. You know, and they've both, you know, in this project, but to get there, and they don't want this star to become, you know, to destroy their friendship. So Howard and Dean decide
it.
That it's going to be called.
That was young, but yep.
It's going to be called HD, right? And it's set in America because this is. I think this is the.
Oh, can I work out where this is going to go?
Yeah.
Can I guess? Is one of them born on, or are they both born on the third of the 12th, 1988?
It's not 12 because it's 3-2-1, not 3-1-2.
It's called HD, obviously after Howard and Dean, and they discovered it on the 3rd of. Hang on, have a what?
How is it the 3rd of December or the 12th of March?
How does American dates work again?
It goes month, day, year.
Yep. So it's discovered on the 21st of March, 1988.
There you go. That's how it works.
And that's where the name comes from.
It's seriously vibing like Bill and Ted 2 right now.
I was really thinking like, yeah, I was getting that. I was getting like one vote, you know, when they're like, playing board games with the devil. Sorry, with death.
Yeah.
So I was getting them vibes. But then also, like, while I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, maybe I could make some commentary about how teamwork in academia and group projects are the worst. About, like, how sometimes there's very clearly one person who does all the work. But maybe there's not. Maybe from a different point of view, maybe Phil thought that he did do stuff in the project. Maybe.
I just like the idea that it is this farce about something that is both monumental as well as entirely mundane.
Yeah, it is a farce. It's a nothing aspect about something so big and so ginormous, but also not really that important.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
Of course you do.
I just don't want beakers in their lab because...
I was just thinking of sciencey things, Gemma. They can be...
You could put in, like, astrophysics stuff rather than chemistry stuff, yeah. But...
We'll get one of them things, you know, that every primary school has, where it's like the sun, and it has all the planets in the circle.
Yeah.
We'll get one of them.
My brain's forgotten what they're called.
Can I just ask, Gem, what's your problem with beakers?
They are for chemistry, not for studying the sky. I love chemistry.
Oh,
chemistry,
no, Gemma, actually, we need beakers because you know how it ends. You know how it ends.
Competition.
It ends with them. No, it ends with them finally agreeing that they're like, oh, this is the name. And to celebrate, one of them gets some whiskey that he's been holding. I was like, I've been looking after this for the whole time. And they're like, we haven't got any glasses. And he's like, oh, we'll use these. Beakers. And that's how it ends, them drinking some whiskey out of beakers.
I'm pretty sure there's a joke, and I'm not in.
There's not a joke. I'm having the beakers, Gemma. I'm having the beakers.
Oh, it hurts me.
I need it for that scene.
It hurts me.
And I'm putting my foot down.
Yeah, Gem, I'm actually just going to insist that in my play, there's also a lot of beakers.
Beakers.
instead of tickets, the audience have to bring along a beaker. With the details of the show printed on it.
They have to print it onto the beaker themselves.
Oh, yeah,
too.
They have to laser etch it. Yeah.
Yeah. And only the successful candidates can join your man on his mission to Mars.
Well, there's not that much room on the van.
I really like the farce. I like it. And I can see a very easy way in which your two shows smush. And then I think I'm going to be the curveball that
we bring the beakers together.
Right, let's see if we can bring this beaker together.
Don't smush beakers, we'll get glass in our hands.
Okay, so in the article, the two things that really struck me were this idea that the HD 32188 is brighter and larger than our sun, but it is barely visible to the naked eye. And it's like 30 times larger, significantly more bright. But it is still barely naked to, it's barely naked, it's barely visible to the naked eye. And I don't know if I've just got a bee in my bonnet at the moment, but I what I really want to do, right, is my show is set in a planetarium, okay? We've got a planetarium, it can be in any planetarium. And the audience are sold that they are going to see a show in the planetarium with, hopefully I can get someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson or Brian Cox, someone who is a big star amongst astrophysicists, right? And as the audience come into the planetarium, they are greeted by our star, either Brian Cox or deGrasse Tyson. And they're like, oh, you're a little bit early, but don't worry. Just come in. We're still setting up for the show. Just come in anyway and just get yourself comfortable. And they're stood at the plinth, and it's the setup for the show, and they're running the script, they're clarifying things that are written, but the whole idea is that there is, and I've deemed her a her, if only because I am a her, so I identify, but it really doesn't matter what gender this person is. But we have a technician who is never seen by the audience. But they are, through the interaction between the presenter and the technician, they are clearly the one who wrote the script. The presenter is clarifying things that are written. This tech is coming in and fixing and moving around some of the tech issues, adjusting the microphones, doing all of the stuff that you tend to do when you're setting up for a show. But there's a real scripted emphasis on this idea that without this technician, this show and this presenter would not be the star that they are. But we never see them. And I feel like I have this image in my head that if ever they have to walk on stage, that they are backlit so that you can't really see who they are either. And I really wanted to tap into this idea throughout the show that essentially this technician is that, you know, it's that story of you're top of your class, you're brighter, funnier, better, like you are just more than and better than the people who are the stars around you, the people who are getting attention. And anybody who was like a well-behaved kid at school who was like an A-star student will like identify with this complex of going, nobody ever paid attention to me, despite the fact that I was brighter than everybody else, and that I was, you know, that idea that you are brighter and larger than the sun, but nobody ever pays attention to you, and you don't get a name like sun. That person is called Dao, because 32188, if you type that out on a mobile phone, that comes out to Dao, which I quite like, and that's quite an ambiguous name as well. But the show goes on and you can barely see them, with a lot of apologies from the star, I'm looking at the end of so we run up throughout the show to the start of what would be the show without the technician, right? And we end just as the presenter says, I wrote down the line. They say, right, welcome. This is a show about the stars that we cannot see. And then we black out and we go to an end, with potentially that person saying like, oh, Dao, can you come help? Thank you. You're such a bright spark, to kind of really just emphasize that. But it's, my idea is really a love note to every technician, a love note to any assistant, anybody who essentially facilitates, because they don't get the credit that they deserve for doing the work that they do. Because especially working in theatre, we know if the technician isn't on it, the whole show can fall apart very, very easily. They never really get the credit that they deserve, especially some technicians. So it was really that kind of love note to anybody who sits there and makes other people look good and is fun, you know, is the writer behind the comedian, is the writer behind the presenter. It's a love note to those people who are actually the brighter, the funnier, but aren't the stars. They're barely visible to the naked eye. That's my pitch.
So I do just want to speak here for all the kids who were floating around kind of occasionally A's, but mostly B's and C's. We noticed you A-star kids. We just didn't want to give you the satisfaction.
You hated us, I know.
Yeah, you got your reward. It's called A-stars. What did you need?
Look
our fucking love?
Look at us now.
So, my show and Joe's show was based on a rant by me from last week. And Gemma's show is clearly based on a rant from me in the past.
And also, I think, a rant that I keep having every now and then.
You had me at the technician's the star, and I'm also going to backlight him on stage. That's where you had me.
Yeah, I don't really know how we could sell people on watching someone be backlit for too long.
By having Brian Cox or Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Right,
like,
I
don't know. I just feel like if you backlit someone for too long, people would just hate it.
Like it's not backlit the whole show. It's just for like that time when Sean has to awkwardly walk across the stage and try not to be seen because
I'll try and make my bit here less obvious.
For anybody listening, jump onto the video podcast because Drew's pointed upwards.
Joe, you've watched shows where the technician randomly appears on stage. Always in it.
Yeah. Also, I do want to say there was one point in that where I got quite excited that I thought Sean had pre-planned for us doing a space-themed podcast and got himself some Milky Way stars to eat during the pitch. But then it turns out it wasn't.
It was Dairy Milk. There's magic stars already. They're so nice. You can't help yourself.
This becomes a pitch for either the Cadbury's or Nestle Corporation, to Gemma's pitch.
I actually have some stuff about Gemma's pitch.
Okay.
And then we can go back to you telling us about your favourite time a technician was on stage. Two things. Action Hero, done a show where it was where you had that back and forth between, and they played it for comedy, and they played it for, there was a you had a diva and the tech was just like making sure to show, so you could play it that way. I feel like that'll work. I feel like that'll work. My issue is the bit where the audience don't think they're coming for a show.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely convinced by that because we've been in that situation. It was horrible. Yeah.
The first thing I ever saw at uni was a show called Untitled. And this was before I appreciate post-dramatic theatre. This was definitely at my point where I was like, if it's on stage, I want a narrative. I want to start, middle, and end, right? That thing had started, and it was only until about 20, let's say half an hour in, that I'd realised that thing had started. It literally, what you described as your start, like, are they still doing the pre-tech? Is it that? I felt that, and I was there like, oh, that's a bit... Yeah. Okay, well, I was there like, you know what it's like. Just crack on. And it was only until, because they hadn't turned the, which I think, obviously, they'd done it on purpose, hadn't turned the audience lights on, so I was still on. So I hadn't, I hadn't turned off. And it was only until I saw, like, obviously, other students watching the show making notes, when I was like, this is the show? They've started? And then, which then put me, looking back, I think it put me in a bad mood because I had to write an essay about that and I was an absolute arsehole about that show. So I think you've got to be careful. It will work. I mean, you got to be careful with how you're framing it to an audience, because they might be big fans of science or Brian.
Yeah, and I think...
And then they're not getting that lecture. They're getting, like, theatre technicians are great.
But I think throughout, because they're essentially, they're running the script just beforehand. So they are getting, the one thing I did want to get are all of the facts of HD32188 in the show. So they are, they're about to give a presentation about it. But it's things like, just, it's that as you're doing the show, you kind of, you pause and you go, hold on. Can you just explain to me this bit so that if I get asked questions, or, you know, how if you are given something as a presenter to actually present, there might be stuff in there that you don't, like a name that you don't know how to pronounce, or a little set of words that you're like, oh, does it have to be said this way? Or like, what does this phrase actually mean? And it's those clarifying things that you have as a professional anyway. But we are still running the script. We're still running all of that information so that we are, and you know, we're sitting there, we are playing with the tech of a planetarium, but it's just a case of that we manufacture faults within that tech that shows up and gives the technician the ability, or the assistant, the ability to demonstrate. It's always just finding those moments within a show to demonstrate that this is the person that facilitates this show keeping going, you know, like it, if the lights all go out.
Jem, we get the point, but my point is,
no, can, I 100%
you can,
agree.
You can stick to the script. Yeah, in the script it is, at this point there is a mess up, but your audience are there for a different context.
Yeah.
They're not realizing that it's a theatre show. They're not realizing that this is part of the show.
Yeah, you're right. So I just changed that bit to that, you know, it's this is a love story to every assistant, every technician, featuring Brian Cox and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, but you're saying your point is that their presentation is having hiccups that the technician has to deal with.
So my saying
is that you started yours with your audience is arriving thinking this show.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is you have brought that up and I've agreed with you, because when I thought of that element of the pitch and when I pitched it, every time I came across that side of my idea, I was like, this feels too much like entitled, and I didn't like that as an experience, as an audience member. So I'm saying, yeah, you're right. I'm changing my pitch a little bit and saying, actually, that's a good point. We bill it as a love letter to our assistants, so our audience know what they're coming into. And it's just one of those that you sit there as your mock frame-up.
Also, as a technician... This is, as a technician, if there's one thing that I would not want to remind anyone is, like, oh, mistakes happen in shows. You know how you honour me by not even knowing I'm there.
Yeah, but it's also a case of, like, this person isn't just the technician as well. They are also the person who wrote the script. They're the person who knows it better than our presenter. Because we look at Brian Cox and we look at deGrasse Tyson and we see them as this all-knowing, all-powerful astrophysicist star brain, right? Whereas they will and do have lots of people doing research for them, lots of people. And, like, when you work in a museum setting, a lot of the time you will have prepared that much to give to a presenter. And then you'll also probably be sitting there going, yeah, I'll press the button on the planets to make them spin.
Shall we jump to the smush?
Yes.
Because
let's get smushy with it.
Over the course of this, I think I've developed a pretty strong smush.
Go for it, because I have no idea how we smush in it.
So, we start with, obviously, the fact that the three shows we have are my idea for a play set aboard a camper van about someone who's gifted a star deciding to travel to it and make it their new home. We've got Sean's two-hander about a pair of friends arguing about who gets to name their star. And we've got Jem's tribute to the unseen technicians and assistants and people who are really supporting everything. And so I want to pitch to you a third show entitled Star Vehicle.
I mean a fourth show.
Fourth show, yeah. But yeah, so ladies and gentlemen,
I'm just in the vehicle. Background, just keeping everything going.
He's there making sure I realise, oh yeah, 3 plus 1 is 4, not 3.
I like the way you said 3 plus 1 is, and my brain went 2.
Oh god.
This is why we need Sean. but so essentially it's taking kind of, I'll be honest, I think the thing that really sold my piece was the van setting. Would I be right?
Yeah.
So my idea is we take this, and the idea within it is that it's a star vehicle in the sense that it is within the show itself, the star actor is someone who has been commissioned to make a show about traveling around talking about space, but they're just an actor who was in like a Star Trek type TV show or something. They know nothing about space. And in fact, the play is about the rest of the crew who all have to hobble together to make this, the van work, let alone the TV show, and how they're the ones making it and they get none of the credit for what is the work of this celebrity who just turns up, reads their lines and doesn't have any idea really what they're saying. And so it's kind of taking basically the van from Mine, having it kind of following that sort of like farcical styling of Sean's, of like have it high energy, have it kind of almost like Noises Off style, I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But then taking that spirit of yours, of it being a tribute to all the people who are behind the scenes making these things work and aren't ever given the same credit as the stars.
So it's a writer's room, yeah, and then Patrick Stewart turns up with a van and does a performance and like phones in a performance about space.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I quite like the idea that there's like opportunity in that idea to have like if you're ever on a film set or just anywhere in the right space or time and like something needs to be held up. It doesn't matter who the hell you are, you're going to be holding that thing up. I like the idea that we can be grabbing audience members and being like, can you just Google this really quickly? I mean, search engine this really quickly before Joe shouts at me. Can you just hold this twinkly diamond bolt ball here and like have a little bit of fun?
I was thinking
way.
What would be fun for this would actually be to take the van and basically put it kind of like in the middle, essentially, of take a warehouse and build a sound stage in it. So that, yeah, we get like audience members up and just being like, sorry, could you just hold this a second? Get them basically being a boom operator for scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's
I quite
just,
like
yeah.
that. Sean,
I've just had a thought.
Okay.
Does it have to be a van? I'm pretty sure Ford did a massive people carrier called a Ford Galaxy. Is that too on the nose?
No, it's not.
No, I like it.
We are going to do that. Yes. And then if we can get Harrison Ford in a Ford Galaxy, I can sell that show.
You can't even get Harrison Ford to do Star Wars anymore. I don't think he's going to do
Star
some
Trek.
Crappy, space referenced post-dramatic play where the audience gets
No, I know how we sell it to Harrison Ford. We tell him, we don't care if you're high for the entire show. In fact, we
it's
encourage
even
it. If we told Harrison Ford we'd pay him to turn up, phone it in and get high the entire time, he'd be there.
I think a lot of people would be there. I think that's just how we get whomever we need.
Literally no one else is Harrison Ford.
It's true. So, we have
I would want Star Trek actors before we get to Star Wars.
Yeah, I also love how
we need
what
Nathan
started
Fillion.
As a show about the virtues of the behind the scenes cast has become a chat about the star attraction.
The star. It has to be Nathan Fillion. Just saying. Come on! Give in to the cult. Be a brown coat.
Am I giving in to the cult? I'm suggesting Star Trek actors before Firefly actors.
Exactly.
But yeah. So, before this becomes another conversation, as you know, we're still on the clock. Sean has football to get to.
It's true.
Does anyone have any other amendments they need to make to the smush?
No, I like the smush.
Yeah, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I like the way we've gone, oh, here's some pictures. Oh, yeah, it's fine. If you're listening and you think it is fine, give us a thumbs up. If you think it's not fine, let us know. If you think it's even better, tell us which one you prefer.
Well, mine?
No, mine!
That happens every week.
I have Brian Cox.
But you know what? You've got your pitch there for our various shows based on HD 32188. But Sean, if people wanted to let us know what they thought of this week's show, while I load up the randomizer, where can they find us online?
I'm so loving our segues.
This guy. Professional. He's on the star. So if you want to follow us, you guys, you know after all these episodes, you know what to do. You go to Linktree, OFITD, and there you'll find YouTube links, Twitter links, Facebook links, Instagram links. There's a website. There's probably links to playlists on YouTube. Just click them all. You know, subscribe, follow, tweet. Just like, share, and subscribe. All the stuff that you are seeing or listening to right now. The links are in the description. Do it. Great. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's still Shawnee B. Hey, Gemma, people want to follow you on social media. Where can they do that?
If they want to stalk me, they can go on Instagram at OFITD_JEM. OFITD_JEM.
Hey, Gemma, I'm going to put my phone off flight mode and see if it's worth stalking you on Instagram. And while I'm doing that, Joe, where can people follow you on Instagram?
Or Twitter, or
Facebook, or whichever one you like.
Yeah, I was going to say, my Instagram is not a great follow, to be honest. But if you do want to find me online, you can do so at NotJoeRanchka. That's NotJoeRanchka. And a Sean.
Yep.
Hey, Jem.
Joe.
Do you want to know what we're going to be talking about next week?
No.
Ah. Well, it's a shame because you're about to find out. And
shoot.
You know
go
what?
For it.
The bad news is, Sean, that you know, or good news to some, but you know how I've been saying we got to get going because you've got football to watch. Next week we're going to be talking about it as well because we're talking about El Dorado. El Dorado
like
is the name given to an era of the Colombian Football League, during which it broke away from FIFA, brackets 1949 to 54. Although the Colombian national team and all domestic clubs were banned from international competition during this period, it is nonetheless considered the golden age of Colombian football.
Oh,
I bet you that, like, this cocaine will appear in that Wikipedia article, you know it. That ain't white paint on the grass.
I'm gonna have to figure out if cigars are legal here.
Well,
everyone's too high to realise what's offside. Yes.
Well, on that wonderful note, thank you anybody who's been listening. Let us know which of our eight.
I like that Gemma doesn't end on that bombshell anymore. I like that she's like got rid of that.
I genuinely, when you brought that up, I was like, no, have I said it without realising it? Is it that well ingrained? But if you've enjoyed any of our pictures for HD 32188, And I'm so glad I can still remember that sequence of numbers. Then let us know. But otherwise, we will see you in the next episode where we try and keep it PC, but probably won't.
And as always, knock it out the pitch.